Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. It is Saturday, December the 7th, 2019, and welcome to another Saturday night edition of the Saturday Spotlight with your boy, the one and only, your favorite author, that's E-R-Y, not R-E-Y, R-O-S-H-E-L-L, none other than myself. Author Jeffrey Rochelle. Tonight, we talk to author Danielle Bigsby, my sister from down south. She is going to talk about, I believe, her books, Hood Tales, Hood Six. And I believe it's right, Danielle, don't kill me when you get on. But she's going to talk about her book, and I'm excited about having her on. I followed Danielle for about maybe a year or so. We've been social media friends, and she, like I said, she's my fellow sister author. I'm excited to talk to her, and I'm excited to hear about this book that she's going to talk about tonight. Well, first and foremost, as we always do, let's get into the week. So the week for me, as any other week, was work. Work, 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 work. That's what we do. We work to pay bills. We work to do what we need to do to pay the bills, keep food on our table. You know, and I'm so thankful that I'm able to work a job, two jobs at that. I got two jobs. So not just one blessing, but two blessings of two jobs to work and provide for myself by all means necessary. But this week, I want to talk on the subject of us authors getting into the platform of awards. Now, what I mean by that is that there is a awards nomination that goes on every year by UBAWA. UBAWA is a African-American urban, I want to say it's urban books, UBAWA books. They have a magazine, they do a literary awards like list every year called the 100 Black African-American Authors of the World. And this list goes up every New Year's Eve. I believe New Year's Day is posted completely, but they do it every year. The girl, I can't think of her name, she does it every year. She's an avid reader. She loves African-American authors from what I get from her, from following her on social media. And she posts this list of the top 100 African-American authors of Urban Lit. So last year, I'm going to dig deep into last year before I get into this year and the author's platform issue that I have. Last year, the list went up. I made the list last year, and that list had about 100-something, like I said, plus authors on it, but I made up that list, to make a long story short. And as I got on social media and saw other authors that were on my Facebook friends list and things of that nature that made the list, I also saw certain authors that did not make the list. And I also started to see a bunch of negative feedback from other authors that did not make the list. And I cannot think of the one particular author's name. He was a male name. But he put up a big post about F that list, and that list don't mean nothing, and who are all these people on this list? And it was another female, I believe she's an author. I haven't seen any books that she's written, but I know she's an author. And she was like, F the list, and we don't know who none of these people are, and blah, blah, blah. But I had to go down into that comment section and say, because she do talk to me on a regular, I'm on that list. So I kind of feel some kind of way when you say F that list and F everybody on there. But she kindly sent me a happy face emoji, and it kind of changed everything. But my thing is this, and I did not win, and it didn't bother me perfectly at all, and I'm going to talk about why. But I did not, needless to say, I did not win last year. I was not stoked about it. I was okay with the fact that my name was on the list, that I made the list, that people thought about me to nominate me for the list. I was happy about that. But I did not make the list, and that did not bother me one bit at all. I did not have a problem with it. But I say this in reference to her and the other guy's comment. I should not say comment, but the status that he put up in the comments that I've seen, too, from other people were ridiculous as well. Why do we get into the whole notion of I wrote a book or I'm writing books and I have to win an award? Your award is people reading your book and getting the message that you sent. To me, that's what it should be, because that's the one thing that I said. And I've won. I have 4 books. My fifth and sixth will be out before the end of 2020. But I have 4 written books total, and I won 2 awards. I won Literary Award of 2017 for my second novel, It's Gonna Rain, by Tennille Jackson and her APS International Books here in Chicago. And then I also won another award for my first novel, Thornhill High School. But at the ceremony for Tennille Jackson's book, for my book at Tennille Jackson's ceremony for the APS Urban International Books, I should say, my words are getting jumbled a little bit. At that ceremony, when I got up to accept my award, I said, you know what? I didn't set out to write books to win awards. And if I never win an award, my whole thing was, as long as people read my books and got the message that I sent, that's all that I worried and cared about. If I never won an award, that's all I cared about. And I was grateful to have won that award, but I gave that same speech, that same exact speech that I'm saying now when I was accepting that award, because my reward was people reading my books and knowing who I am and saying, oh, when is Jeffrey Rochelle dropping another book? Because I got to get that book. I want to read it. His books are so good. And I do at times, I'm not going to lie, I do at times feel like I'm slept on, because I do see readers in these groups. And when I post in these groups, I see certain readers click to and cling to certain authors. And to me, by all means, I'm not jealous and I'm not hating on that. But I've also seen readers that read my genre, because people will say all the time too, well, when you kind of feel in a certain way about readers and they not want to read your book, do they read your genre? Where it has been situations where readers read my genre and don't read my book. And there's people that I know that are on my Facebook page that read my genre but don't read my book. But I've kind of got the, how you want to say it, the tough skin, and have just thought about it like it is what it is, because just because you don't read my books don't mean the next person not going to read my books. And that's how it's been. It's people that you don't know support you more than people you do know. That saying is so true. But there have been times where I have been in these reading groups, and I'll see that, okay, he or she reads my genre. Here it is, I'm posting my book. Here is the information, the synopsis on my book, but you passed me up to go to somebody else's book. Or if I'm at a book signing, and what I've learned to do is adapt to book signings, so when I go do them and go to these book events, I only take a certain amount of books. I don't take a bunch of books. That's the one thing I've learned to keep me sustained successful at a book signing, is that I don't take a plethora of books. Regardless of how big that book signing is, because you never know if you're going to sell every book or not that you bring, because your intent is to sell every book that you bring and not come back with any. But there have been book signings in the past that I've came back with books. So now when I do a book signing, I take the less amount of books. But My whole thing was never to set out to win an award. And I've seen so many authors get mad when they don't make this 100 You Buy Why list. It's a list. Why are we concerned about a list and whether or not we make it or not? I'm not understanding that. Our concern should be a reader getting the message out of our books or liking our books. I just could not get in the habit. And I've seen not just the two authors I'm talking about, but other authors as well, too, get hooked in this list. It's like this list is not bringing you no money for your books. This list is not making or breaking you. Why are we so concerned about making this list? And I had even got attacked because I had an issue with the same authors being on this list every year. And I kind of reached out to the girl that does the You Buy Why list, and I said, you know, maybe these authors that keep winning, you know, they don't need to be on this list every year. Let's give an author, a new author, a chance to make that makes the list a chance to shine. Because if you got the same names on this list that keep winning, they don't need to be on that list. And needless to say, I think she took heed to that, because this year, a person I saw that was on the year before or the year after, the year before and the year before that, was not on there this year. So I think maybe she may have took that into consideration this year. But I had so many people, when I put that response to that status up, attacking me, not so much aggressively, but they were saying, if I make this list every year and win, why should I be taken off the list next year? Okay, my problem was this, and I said to this person that gave me that response, did you just listen to what you said? You made the list last year and this year too. So why would you want to sit on a list again and you know you're going to make the list for next year? I wouldn't want to do that. Give somebody else a chance that nobody knows or that people know that don't win to win, because we all can win. We all can eat, as a lot of the urban authors want to say with this. You know, we all got a story to tell. All our stories are different. The way we write is different. We don't write the same. But we all can get our books out to readers that like to read them, but I just don't understand what it is about this list. I mean, this list is just every year I see this, and I know it's going to probably go on again next year. Somebody going to reach out and say, I didn't make the list, F that list. That list say is S-H-I-T, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you know what? A list don't make or break you. What you should be concerned about is a reader picking up your book and saying, hey, I love that book. Where's your next one at? Or when is your next one coming out? Or where are your books that I can pay for and purchase and get them? You know, because you are a talented writer. I have gained my reading audience from that, from word of mouth. And like I said, when I go out to different book signings, I don't take that many books because I want to sell everything I take. So I take the less amount of books. But my whole notion on that was never to win an award. And like I said, when I accepted the 2017 award for Fiction Book of the Year for my second book from Tennille Jackson with her APS Books International in Chicago, that was the one thing I said. I said, Tennille, I never intended for this book to win an award. I never intended for any of my books to win an award. So for APS to make this book the fiction book of 2017, that was a lot, you know, because I never set out for that book to do as well as it did, but it actually did good. I've gotten so much praise for that book. There was supposed to be talks of a play for that book, and there was also I'm going to turn that book into an audio book where somebody's going to be reading, where you can listen to it as an audio book in 2022. So I was proud of myself for that, but I don't get caught up in these platforms. I don't care about these platforms. These author platforms don't make or break you. It's about your creative talent of writing and people reading your book. Because before I was the writer, I was a reader. And I think that if I wasn't writing books, I would be a part of some one of these big book clubs that read books, because I was an avid reader. When I was a teller back in the early 2000s on the teller line at the bank, I had, because at that point I worked for a family-owned bank, and we could read on the teller line if we had downtown. We didn't have to so much, you know, it was laid back, lacky days, I should say, so we could read. So I had everybody that I worked with reading Kwan Foy. Everybody was reading all of Kwan's books that he wrote back in the early 2000s because of me, because I was an avid writer. We were reading him. We were reading Eric Jerome Dickey. I brought in Zane. You know, those type of authors, they were out at that point really hot. They still hot now, but at that point, because I could read on the teller line, I introduced a lot of my teller coworkers to those books. So Like I said, if I wasn't writing books, I'd be an avid reader. But like I said, with the whole thing on wanting to be on this list, it don't make or break you. I'm just not understanding why us authors, some of us, I should say, have the notion to want to be a part of this list. Okay, you make the list. Your name is on the list. Okay, boom, bam. What's next? Because I don't know if you receive an award or, you know, anything in the mail for it, but it's like, okay, you're on this list. It is an accomplishment. Don't get me wrong. But what is it about this list that's going to make or break you? Like I said, I don't understand it. I've seen it this year, last year, and I know I'm probably going to see it again. But I just want to touch base on it because me, myself, as long as a reader reads my books, I'm not caught up in making a list or any awards. As long as my name is becoming a household name, which I'm goaling towards, that's all that matters. Because I like reading books and I like writing books. And I just want, you know, my fellow other author brothers and sisters to have that same notion. I know, don't get me wrong, we all want to win an award for our work. We all want to be praised for our work. That's understandable. But you should not be focused on winning an award for your work. Your award is getting your book out there to a reader and getting your message out and being excited about your baby when you do it. So that's my whole take on that. Now, I've been seeing so much with the sex trafficking, and y'all be careful out there, especially the females and this whole sex trafficking thing that's going on down south. You got some of it going on here in Chicago, I was seeing on the news. And I just want to tell all my female listeners, just y'all be careful. It is the holiday season. Pay attention to your surroundings. Be aware of what you're doing. Always look both ways, like you crossing the street. Look both ways when you're coming out. You know, make sure you're not taking too many things in your hand when you're going in, and make sure you get in the house at a decent time. Don't get me wrong, a robbery can take place at any time. It can take place in broad daylight. But most of, you know, robberies that I can kind of quarter say, they at the break of daylight when it's getting dark, you know, you have to be more careful around your surroundings. And it's the holiday season. Like, it was a lady and a guy that was here. Lady and a guy. Two people that they looking for that the news had on there that they think they robbed the same person. Same people robbed these two different people. The lady got, I think she went to a walk. No, she went to Chase Bank, take out some money, and they ambushed her, kidnapped her, put in the back of the Kirk own car, and drove her car to Indiana and left it there. And then they went and got another Caucasian guy. He was at home in a driveway or something. They went and robbed him too, and then went to Walmart. So Walmart here has surveillance pictures of them. And then it's just other little incidents and situations. In my mom's neighborhood, there was a guy on the news that was hiding behind houses and waiting for people to come out. And I told everybody when I seen it on the news, I said, that's an inside job. That's somebody that lives in the neighborhood watching. So it's like, you got to be careful. You got to watch your surroundings. Pay attention to everything. When I come out early in the morning, because I go to work at 6 o'clock in the morning, it's still dark from daylight savings time. I'm looking, especially when it's cold, warming up my car, I'm looking left and right. I'm looking around because you never know who's watching you. And you think people's not watching you? Folks is watching. I tell people that all the time. You may think people in your neighborhood ain't watching you, but folks is watching you. So you got to be very precautious and careful to your surroundings. So I just want to say to my female listeners and my male listeners, but my female listeners definitely, y'all be careful and pay attention to your surroundings with this holiday season. If you don't got to be out too late, don't be out too late. And broad daylight as well, too. Don't just think because it's light out, nobody won't try you. They'll still try you, too. Pay attention to your left and your right. And if anything don't seem right, go back in the house or get in your car immediately. Just, you need to pay attention to your surroundings. It's the holiday season. They trying to cut food stamps. They ain't already done that. And you know times is tough already, so just be safe. It's Christmas season. Let's be safe. Let's be careful. Now, as always, we get to the point of my show. This show is sponsored by Beggar's Pizza of Gary, Indiana, and they're open till midnight. Beggar's address in Gary, Indiana is 4345 South Broadway in Gary, Indiana, and their number is 219-951-0695. Again, their number is 219-951-0695. That's Beggar's Pizza in Gary, Indiana. And Mickey's on Stony, home of the famous jerk fries. And they're open till 1 a.m. Mickey's address is 8126 South Stony Island on the southeast side of Chicago, and their number is 773-902-2800. Again, Mickey's on Stony. They're open till 1 a.m. Their address is 8126 South Stony Island Avenue on the southeast side of Chicago, and their number is area code 773-902-2800. And Layla's Sports Bar and Grill, for all your catering, banquet, and wedding reception needs. Their address for Layla's is 14908 Chicago Road in Dalton, Illinois, and Layla's number is 708-277-9821. Again, Layla's Sports Bar and Grill, located at 14908 Chicago Road in Dalton, Illinois, and their number is 708-277-9821. All right, so we shift gears here. We come to the best part of the Saturday Spotlight every evening, where we get to the author interview. As I stated today, we're talking to author Danielle Bigsby, and she is going to talk about her upcoming latest book. I believe she said it was a prelong on the coming out, or it might be out already. I'm not sure, but she's going to talk about her latest book. And this is author Danielle Bigsby, and I see Danielle in the queue, so I'm going to bring her in. So Saturday Spotlight, let's give a warm welcome to author Danielle Bigsby. Author Danielle Bigsby, my sister, good evening. How are you?
Hey, love.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Okay. Good to hear your voice as well, too.
Yes, I was enjoying your show and listening in. You gave some solid advice, and I wanted to chime in on that list because I made that list the first year.
Okay.
And somebody nominated me. I don't know how I ended on the list. I ended up winning that first year, and I was actually one of the top 100 authors. And for me, it was
okay.
An accomplishment. However, the next year, I was also nominated, but I did not make the list.
Okay.
This list is based on readers that nominate authors. I've never been big on just broadcasting that I got an award. An award for me is a review, letting me know how I did for my work. That's an award to me. It's about the passion and the creativity. None of the other stuff, I won't say it doesn't matter, but if you get fixated on making a list or trying to be the best-selling author or a top 100, you're missing the point of reaching your readers, and you could deviate the wrong way. So it should always be about the impact to the reader. And that's pretty much how I chime in on that list.
Okay. I'm glad to hear your input. I knew, Danielle, you was going to chime in on it. I knew you was going to say something about it, so I was waiting on it. Because I knew you was going to say something about it, sis. I knew you would.
I mean, there are so many authors, and I mean, you have to understand that the readers want to nominate their authors that they love, and that's understandable.
Right.
So the same name may come up every year because their readers want to support them. I think too much focus is being put on the list. Like, this list comes every December. If you're worried about making that list in December, what were you worried about from January to November?
Correct.
Like, I'm worried about getting out my book, grinding, hustling, keeping my brand in the forefront. And if that hustle happens to put me on the list, then God bless. If it doesn't, I got something else to grind for.
Exactly.
Now, with my latest upcoming release, we did have a little stall, Amazon. I actually designed this cover and everything with this book myself this time. So it didn't.
Okay.
The measurements were slightly off, so Amazon rejected it. We're fixing it. We're in the process of getting it all together and getting it packaged, so it should be out in the next couple of days. Today was a special day, however, because it's my big brother, who is no longer with us, birthday, and he's the one who saw this vision of being an author for me. It was never my dream. I used to just dedicate poems to loved ones and show love. But he was like, you need to write a book. And sadly, he passed away in 2014. But in his honor, I released my first book in January 2015, and we've been going strong ever since.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, Danielle, I want you to tell us who you are. We got to get a good glimpse of who you are going into everything else. So tell us who is author Danielle Bigsby, and, you know, tell us just your general story. I know you're getting into it, but I want to kind of quarterback and, you know, let the listeners know who author Danielle Bigsby is, how many books you got, and let's talk about your brother and, you know, the tragic event and everything from there forward. Go ahead, bro.
Author Danielle Bigsby is a realist and introspective author who's going to paint no matter what story she vividly tells in the rawest form of fashion. There will always be a message in every poetry volume, in every novel, in every novella, in every anthology. There will always be a message. You just sometimes have to catch it. I paint my stories from a raw perspective. I have been known in the past to be the resident wild child because what comes up comes out. And I have no filter at times when it comes to speaking about what I want to talk about. The book we're discussing tonight is the sixth volume in my anti-gun violence line. It's narrative poetry that is targeted towards advocating for our youth and older generations to put down the guns and just live. Sadly, I had a nephew that was murdered back in 2010 at the tender age of 14 due to gun violence, and it affected my family deeply. So he came to me, and he said, how is this impacting you? In a dream, he spoke to me. He said, what are you doing with this? And it launched the vision of penning these poetically realistic tales to help emphasize just what pulling the trigger of a gun does to families, to loved ones, to friends, to associates, to teachers, to children, to parents. We have to definitely put all of that out there. And so I'm determined to always put all of that out there and make sure that they know at all times that I am advocating for our youth. Like, our youth are the most important thing to me. And I do this in order to give back. I feel like we're all given the gift of using our pen. Now, do something with it. Don't just tell tales. Actually do something with it. Make it count. And this is my way of advocating and giving back.
Okay. And you said you started in, was it 2014?
2014 was when I penned my first actual poetry volume, and it was actually titled at that time Rivers of Emotion, and that title has been reworked three times and has ultimately become Braving the Storm, Life Cleansing Moments. When I first set out to write a book, it was just to honor my brother. Honestly, I have to be one of those real authors and tell you I had no idea what I was doing. I jumped out there because he saw the vision for me. And in jumping out there, I learned with each novel what to do, what not to do. I'm not one of those that's going to paint the picture and make it seem like it's all peaches and cream, because it's not. However, at the same time, my passion for writing and telling tales is what keeps me going through the good, the bad, the ups, and the downs.
Okay. So this was more like a therapeutic thing for you after the tragedy of your brother and then, you know, your nephew. Writing this poetry has been more therapeutic. Is that what I'm getting from you as well, too?
Yes, and also the anti-gun violence line has been Nashville, Tennessee is where I'm from, and it's always known for country music, the Tennessee Titans. But you never see the urban side of Nashville, Tennessee. And this was my way of saying, hey, gun violence happens here. It touches neighborhoods here. It's not just country music. We're seeing the urban sad tragedy here as well. The epidemic is real in Nashville, Tennessee. So these are real life victims. Each volume includes a picture of a victim. It tells you the age they were when they died, the age they would have been at the time the new volume is published, how many children they left behind, you get to see not just a statistic, but a real person.
Mm. Okay. And these books, have they been like the ones that you've written in this volume series? How successful have they been? Like, is your message, are you reaching the masses like you want? Or do you feel like it's a little bit more that you can do? Or are you really reaching the masses like you're setting out to do, like your goal is being accomplished as you're doing these books?
It depends on which way you look at it in terms of success, because oftentimes I will admit at book events and when I release these books that I see people tend to shy away from them, and it's because we see so much gun violence in the news that it may be a hard tale to read. However, each time I see a youth pick up my book, my mission was accomplished. Each time I hear a child say, or a teen say, or a young adult say, I knew that person, man. I'm going to read that book. My mission was accomplished. Each time I see a child see through my story as an author, because I grew up in the hood. I unfortunately am a felon. I've been through that struggle. So when they look at me and see that you can come out of that, my mission was accomplished.
Okay.
So I don't look at it in terms of sales, if it's like moving the way it is, because if I did, then my erotic stories would be my bigger moneymaker. But my passion, this is where my heart is. My Hood Love volumes are my babies. That's where my deepest inspiration is, to grab a youth, to give back, and to save one child's life. If I reach just one, then it was all worthwhile.
Yes, I hear you, my sister. And kind of like I said, when I made that comment at the award ceremony, that was my hope as well, too. If I never win an award, just my message is what I want to reach the people. And I like that you put that as well, too. If you don't never sell out, just if that one youth picks up your book and their life is turned around or they're changed from reading that book, your mission has been accomplished. I like that.
I'll give you an example. I did the Hustle and Grind book event, not last year, but the year before, the first one. And there were a lot of big names in that building. There were a lot of authors that were a little more well-established than I was. And I was hustling and I was doing my thing. And there was a young child, I believe she may have been like 12 or 13, she walked up to my table, and she just kept looking at Hood Love Volume 2. She just kept looking at it. And I asked her, "You want this book?" And she was like, "Yeah, but I have no money." And I looked, and I looked around. And in terms of the youth, it's never about sales for me. It's about them being impacted by the message. So I politely said, "Baby, come here, what's your name?" She told me her name. I said, "All I ask is one thing, promise me that you'll read it." She said, "You have my word that I will." I autographed it to her free of charge, no big issue. It won't be the last book. And it felt more like a blessing to me. But what made it more beautiful for me is, in the midst of still selling books and still hustling at the event, I looked up and this young lady was sitting on the staircase with Quan was there. You got Danielle. You got Amelika McCall in the building. You got all of these, which are awesome authors and peers that I love dearly. I looked up and this young lady was sitting on the staircase with her face buried in Hood Love Volume 2. And it meant much to me, because she sat there as her mother shopped for other books and buried her face in my book. That meant more to me than anything. So each child or each teen or each young adult that reads this book or any of the Hood Love volumes will always touch my heart, and it'll always leave a soft spot there, because I know somebody's child that was murdered, their death wasn't in vain, because somebody read your story and it made them think. And that's the most important thing.
Yes, and I think reaching into the hood, definitely, because I know from my old neighborhood, that book would definitely be appreciated, because my old neighborhood is not the safest place, and it's one of the known notorious suburban areas in Chicago, where I grew up at. I grew up in Harvey, and I know that definitely that series would make a lot of noise at my old high school. I went to two different high schools, so both of those high schools, but all the high schools in that surround the South Suburban area, definitely, because it's a tragedy every week, Danielle. Every week, or, you know, I read in the paper, somebody getting shot, somebody getting killed. When I was growing up in that neighborhood, it was bad, but it wasn't as worse as it is now. Now it's gotten really, really worse. So I know definitely that book would make a lot of noise if it was to get into the library at the high schools here, or if somebody would just pick it up. Because I know when I wrote my very first book, which was based off of my old high school, I didn't intend for it to get around to the high schools, but it did. And once my mm-hmm. friends that work at the high school started taking pictures and sending it to me on Facebook and stuff, I was like, man, where are they getting my book from? So it's just like you said, it appealing to somebody that knows what's going on and appreciating the book. And like the young lady that was just sitting there reading your book on the steps, you know, it's all about, that's the award that you want. That's what we look at, you know, that our gift is being utilized and it's being, and like you told her, all you want her to do is read. And she was sitting on the porch or the steps or whatever, reading a book.
And that meant everything to me. It is sometimes hard because these volumes are difficult to write. I cry with every volume. It is a deep place mm-hmm. that I go into to tell these tales. I have tales of young men who were shot and died in their parents' arms. I've seen some of the hardest stories I've had to write about. And it cuts deep. It hurts. But if it has that effect on me, then I know it'll touch the reader.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
exactly.
Although it feels like sometimes the volumes are not as heavily supported as I want, I never stop penning them as long as there's breath in my body. Because gun violence will always be an epidemic, but it's not an epidemic that cannot be overcome. We just all must come on the same page to overcome it.
Exactly. 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 Now, how when you're, like you said, you say you draw pictures, is it like you just give me a math frame of how your this series works when you, how you've written it, and, you know, I think you say you have illustration of pictures, you got the illustration of the word. Just give me a brief, like, visionary of how the books are pinned together.
Each book is a narrative poetry. It's almost mm-hmm. as if the victim or one of their family members are talking directly at you, telling you their tale, what they experienced after the trigger of a gun was pulled. The pictures in the book are actual pictures of each victim that has been murdered. With Hood Love Six, we are up to 36 victims that have been murdered in the city of Nashville due to gun violence. That's 36 different people. That is multiple different families. That is heavy. And when you imagine each book, we started with Hood Love One, and there were only six victims. The original six were Ronquez Bigsby, Anton Irvin, Antonio Kelly, Cheryl Phillips, Tyrone Reese, and Lamar Hughes. Those were the original six. With each volume, we bring over the six that were in the previous volume and bring in six new ones. So Hood Love 2 had those six, and we also brought in Jory Sweat, Ronisha Overton, Keith Battle, Antoine Meeks, Isaac Hutchinson, and John Sykes. Hood Love 3 went up to 18 victims, and we brought in Jacquees Clemens. Was a special story because it was the first time I was able to tell a story of gun violence by cops. His mother actually sought me out, and she was like, "It happened in our neighborhood. Will you tell my son's story? He was murdered. It doesn't matter that it was a cop. It was gun violence, and he was murdered." And that was deep because I was like, that's new territory. We don't know if we want to step into that territory because it can get heavy. But I stepped into it and told it anyway, and I'm glad that I did. Because of that story, there was a new coalition in Nashville created where there is a board that actually polices the police in Nashville, Tennessee, because of that young man's murder. We also got into siblings, unfortunately, in Hood Love Story. We had cousins. We have brothers, multiple murders in one family that was very heavy to tell about. It got so deep that there was a young lady in Hood Love 4 that had brought me a young man that was her best friend to feature in Hood Love 3. She was like, can you please tell my best friend's story? And I promised her I would. And sadly, she became the next victim I had to write about in Hood Love 4. They get heavy. They get deep. They're gut-wrenching. I have to almost write a nasty detail after each Hood Love volume because I have to get myself back out of that deep place because it gets really deep. It's really emotional. I allow those feelings of what each family feels after the trigger is pulled, after they sat in the courtroom and lived through the trial, because once you lose a loved one to gun violence, it doesn't die once you bury them. You're living, this is a lifetime hurt. You carry it every holiday, every birthday, every death anniversary. You relive the entire process the moment you live through a trial. And some of these families have never had to go through a trial because they're still searching for justice. And it's 18, 19, 20 years later. So these volumes are very, very, very deep. The pictures in there are actually pictures of the victims that the family has asked me to use or told me they want me to use. You are given the name of the victim, their birth date. You are given their age at the time of their death, their age they would be in the year of publication, whichever volume it may be. You are given the amount of children they left behind. You are, some families have granted permission to tell you the children's names. They want you to see that when you pull that trigger, there's not just one victim.
Right.
There are stories told from the suspect's perspective, because I don't ever want you to feel like gun violence is one-sided. I don't just side on the victim and give you the victim's perspective, because some of the suspects and the ones that actually, the perpetrators, were forced into this lifestyle. They didn't want it. They may have seen mom try to work multiple jobs, and they wanted to help mom, so they got out there to help her. And they were hustling on the corner, and unfortunately somebody tried to rob them, and they shot them and killed them. They never intended to murder anybody. They were trying to help mom.
Mm-hmm.
So I give you gun violence from every perspective with these Hood Love volumes. From the community's eyes, from the child's eyes, from the parents' eyes, from the perpetrator's eyes, from the victim's eyes, you see it from every angle.
And my question was, no, go ahead, I'm sorry.
It's a touchy subject. And all things worth talking about are usually the things that most people avoid, which is why I continue to pen these.
Okay. And I guess my next question that I was going to ask, kind of according to that, was when you've gotten the people that understand that you write this series and they want you to write about their loved one, is that, do you have that feeling like you feel like you're accomplishing something? I think you said but do you feel like it's like fulfilling as you're writing these stories, even though they can be very deep for you, they can be very troublesome for you to write, do you feel that you're doing due justice by getting their stories out?
I do. With Hood Love 3, Jacquees Clemens' mother actually came to me and said, thank you for keeping my son's name alive. And to me, it's comments like those that make what I do worthwhile. We don't get a lot of ebook sales. We don't. Hey, I'm a paperback pusher anyway. So It doesn't really hurt me as much. But it to see, I do a local event in Nashville before Sunday of every month where I set up a table and sell my books, and it's in the sports bar. And what surprised me, and I'm going to share this tale because it was interesting and it was something new I learned this year. I had both Nasty D's books and the Hood Love volumes on the same table. And because it was a sports bar, I expected them to gravitate towards Nasty D. But it was actually the Hood Love volumes that sold out.
Oh, wow.
For me, that was a major accomplishment. Because that meant the message is being heard.
Yes, definitely.
You're touching someone. Hood Love 6 was put together. I normally would make a post that says, you know, we're continuing our anti-gun violence volumes. If you know of someone that's been murdered due to gun violence that would like to have their tale shared, you know, have them email me. I didn't have to do that with 6. 6 was completed. The victims that would be featured in 6 were brought to me before I finished Hood Love 4.
Okay.
They were like, hey, can you put this person? Can you put this person? I'm like, we ain't even through with 4. I got 2 more volumes.
Right.
I got 12 more people already. Like, yo. And it hurts to have to turn people away because they're like, you know, can you put them in this? And I can only do 6 new ones per volume because I carry over everyone else. Like, they're never a forgotten statistic with me. So I carry over each person from the former volumes. So I never bring in more than 6 because, again, Hood Love 6 has 74 poems in it. That's a lot.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So
wow.
That's a lot. And each volume increases in length and the amount of poems. Hood Love 5 has 61 poems in it. So that is a total of 13 more in Hood Love 6. I dedicate a lot to these. They take they're not written overnight. They take a while. And so
when you say a while, go ahead. I'm sorry.
This one I have been writing since May.
Okay.
That, for me, that is a long amount of time because Hood Love 4 was completed in 3 months.
Okay.
And I guess the reason one seemed more lengthy was because of what we had to face. This was the first time I had a mom say, hey, I jumped on top of my son. And I was shot in the shoulder, and he was shot through me, and he died with me holding him. Like, that was deep. Once I told that tale, I had to close Hood Love 6 and walk away for a couple of days.
Oh, wow.
Because I'm a mother. So I felt that mother's pain. I couldn't imagine jumping on top of my child, let alone being shot. And I live, my child dies in my arms.
Deep.
These tales are deep.
So do you have to pull I know you say you do pull yourself away. Has it been like days where you pulled yourself away before writing these deep, intense stories? Like, I can just only imagine what goes through your mind from just hearing this little brief moment what the books are about. Because these stories, these poems are very deep. So does it take a lot out of you where you have to wait a few days or?
Yeah, like it takes a lot. When I penned that tale, I put it down for 7 days. I couldn't write another one because I just cried for that mother. And then to know that mother still doesn't have justice. Although she witnessed her child murdered, they didn't take it to court. The mom fought, but the officer said that her tale was too sketchy. She was too emotional. She couldn't give them a clear picture, so no one has ever been charged.
Oh, wow.
I was like, that's too much. That's too heavy. And after printing that sale, what made me pick it back up after 7 days was that I had to tell myself that needed to be heard, that needed to be seen, that this is what a mother that has lost her child to gun violence is battling. You needed to tell that tale. I don't sugarcoat it. I used to have interviews in the back of the book. We haven't done the interviews in a while because 74 poems takes a long time. And we usually do about 12 to 15 interviews when we do them. So that book would be well over 300 pages. But we used to interview loved ones and ask them, you know, if something happened to your loved one, where were you when it happened? How did it make you feel? If you could face the killer, what would you say to him? Could you ever forgive him? And some of the things I've had these loved ones tell me are hard to convey. They're hard to read. They're hard to say. I don't sugarcoat it, though, but what they tell me is what I write in their own words.
Right.
I will not change it at all, but I've literally had one tell me I'd risk my life to shoot him in the face. And that was hard to write, but it was her truth.
Right. So do you see yourself continuing with these?
Definitely. I'll never stop. As deep as they get and as heavy as they are, I'll continue because I have to. I feel like it's my duty. I'm not only the author. I've lived this tale. My nephew was murdered.
Right.
My family deals with
this.
So I feel like it's my duty to paint for every youth what happens the moment you pull that trigger so that you can get a realistic, introspective, raw picture of what happens the moment that bullet flies out that gun. You can't go back and change that. You can't give that life back. And I need you to see that. So I continue to tell these tales because, as I stated, they tend to think it goes away once, you know, you're buried. And it doesn't. Like, it's all cool when you got the homies in the gang and them are your homies. But when you're dead, it's not cool that they're not checking on your child or your mother or making sure your family's okay and you lay down your life for them, but they living, you dead.
Right. That's true. That's true. That's so true.
Or you out here pulling the trigger and you riding for your friend and now you doing 51 and ain't nobody putting no money on your books. You hungry.
Right. Yeah. So next year, let's kind of quit there. What's in store for Danielle Bigsby for next year? You got this hood, you know, the hood theory. What's in store next year for you?
Well, Danielle took a whole year off the road this year, which was hard to do because I'm one of those on-the-go hustlers. That was the hardest thing for me to do this year. But I did not travel out of town at all for 2019.
Okay.
I promised my kids that I would give them a whole year off the road. So next year, we hustling, baby. You shall see me back on my grind. I shall be back on the forefront in the public eye a little more doing my books. But you will see Danielle more reserved. I came in this industry kicking in doors. I was very raw. I was what came up came out. And I'm still that same person. However, I'm just not in the in crowd. I'd rather my saying for 2020 is business, never personal. So my only thing is to handle business. We got friendships. I love you. I'm going to give you hugs. We'll dap it up, and then I'm going home to the kids because I don't want to get caught up in the shenanigans of this industry. It's business. It's not personal. And I'm seeing it that way going forward.
Okay. Gotcha. So, Danielle, tell the listeners where they can find you at on social media.
You can find me on Facebook at Author Danielle Bigsby. You can find me on Instagram at Bigsby Danielle. I'm also on Twitter, but I don't interact much on Twitter. I just don't. But I am on there. Also, you can find all of my books on Amazon. And also, for those that tuned in tonight, I truly appreciate you. So one of you lucky people will get a ebook copy of the first volume of Hood Love on the House, and one of you listeners will get, once it's released, a copy of Hood Love 6 on the House.
Okay.
I appreciate
okay,
my readers
cool.
and those that have rocked with me. I appreciate you, my brother, because you have stuck it out this year. You are one of my biggest inspirators and motivators, and you keep your sister pushing, and I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Appreciate that. Appreciate that. And we definitely going to get that book out to one of the listeners. It really wasn't too many callers, but I do have a couple of the listeners. So if you want to gift that book, Danielle, that's cool. Or if you want to put it in my favorite things basket, I'm doing that on my last show of the year. If you want to give that, mail that book to me, I'll put it in. If you sign it, I'll put it in that basket and make sure somebody gets it that wins that basket on that show.
Most definitely. And I also want to stress the fact that I know a lot of people see Hood Love 1, 2, 3, 4, and you think it's a series. It's not. Each one is a standalone. They're volumes, but neither one has to be read before the other. They can all be read in any order interchangeably. They're all standalones.
Okay. Okay. Well, Danielle, I thank you for coming on tonight. I thank you for talking about your book. Definitely going to get that book out to you, from you to me, so we can get that book out to one of the listeners on my call for the favorite thing show at the end of the month, okay?
All right, will do.
All right, well, you enjoy the rest of your evening, sis, and I will talk to you soon.
All right, you do the same, and thank you for the opportunity.
No problem. Thank you for coming on the Saturday Spotlight tonight.
All right.
All right. There you guys have it, author Danielle Bigsby with her Hood series. You can check her out on author Danielle Bigsby on Facebook. She has that series out. She's also written an erotica series as well, too. So check her out on Amazon, and you can also look her up on Facebook at author Danielle Bigsby. On next week, we talk to author Tierra Cox, and she talks about her book that's coming out the end of this month, Three's a Crowd, on the Saturday Spotlight. Again, thank author Danielle Bigsby for coming on tonight. Next week, same time, same station. Tierra Cox, as I said, will be on here talking about her book, Three's a Crowd. So as always, I wish you guys a productive week, a good rest of your weekend. As I said, stay safe. And as I always tell you, what you do for Christ is the only thing that will last and will matter. And I will see you next week on the Saturday Spotlight. Good night.